if you were following Twitter in the early days, it was just like e-com apocalypse or the best thing ever for e-com. It was like not clear in March, like what was going to happen.
Kind of want to just like dump this on people and be like, just listen to this and take notes.
Welcome to the ZetaWorks PPC Ponderings podcast, where we discuss the philosophy of PPC and ponder everything related to digital marketing. Today's show is a bonus episode of our full interview with the Director of Strategy at Common Thread Collective, Chris Johnson. In this episode, Chris shares his expansive knowledge on running great tests, iOS 14, and he even has some great thoughts on the supply chain crisis. If you haven't heard Chris on our fourth official PPC Ponderings podcast episode about the supply chain crisis, go give it a listen. Otherwise, please enjoy our behind-the-scenes conversation with Chris.
Yeah, can you give us your name, title, and where you work?
Yeah, so my name is Chris Johnson, probably the most common name on the planet. and I'm the Director of Growth Strategy at Common Thread Collective. We're an agency that originally we were based in Orange County. Now we're all over the nation. We're a fully remote company, about 150 people, primarily focused on direct-to-consumer e-commerce and really focused on the paid media side. So saying, how do we continue to push growth through multiple paid media channels? And then we've also have kind of an arm around retention and creative as well.
How long have you been with Common Thread?
So I've been there almost 5 years, which in like e-commerce kind of marketing years feels like, you know, 50 years. So I kind of self-proclaim I'm the dinosaur of CTC.
Cool.
So I was there pretty early. I think I was the second strategist that they had brought on to kind of build out their team after Andrew. So I've been there for a pretty long time.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I think I first started, I'm trying to remember if it was from following Aaron Orndorff on Twitter or if I first connected with Taylor. Mm-hmm. But at some point in the last few years, you know, started to like see, hey, these Common Thread Collective people, these CTC people, they're like everywhere, right?
Yeah, it is incredible. Like I kind of look up and it's like, I remember the early days, I was where this little tiny office in Orange County, there's like 15 of us all huddled around this little table with the worst chair, like the worst chairs you could find. They're these stadium seats because it was like all sports themed. And Taylor would just have this whiteboard and just like be sketching out the formula. And so it's definitely grown from like that day to like now we have, I mean, some incredible people that are all over Twitter. Obviously, I feel like if you just kind of look on Twitter around Taylor's following, a lot of those are either CTC alumni who have gone on to start brands or work on brands, work in agencies or current CTC employees. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always very impressed by like business trajectories like that because like I've done, I mean, we're pretty small. We have five people. We utilize freelancers. So six of us, right?
Yeah.
And even just that, just the admin side, the things that come into your brain as the founder slash management, that sort of thing that you have to think through with just a few more people. I can't even imagine having to navigate all of that change as well.
Yeah.
And then over the last couple of years. So that's pretty cool. Props to everyone there.
It's a rocket ship. It's like, you know, I think e-commerce by itself is so fast moving. I mean, it's changing every day. And then you put in COVID and it jumps forward a decade almost in terms of its development. And then you're in an agency that's, you know, doubling every year. So it's just, it has been a ride to my wife. Like, I don't think it's going to slow down ever, but we have grown. And so a lot of it has been around how do we service growing e-com brands that have started off early and have grown with us to how do we scale our strategy team from just a few strategists to we're going to be probably around, you know, 15 to 16 teams soon. So it's just the question of scale is everywhere for brands, agency side, people. So it's a fun place to be.
You know, as we look at e-commerce, especially the last couple of years, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, you know, you representing CTC is just I know also you all have your own brands as well.
Yeah.
Kind of have some experience there with both sides basically at the same company. Mm-hmm. So in that sense too, as we go through some of these, feel free to kind of speak to if you'd like just the team at CTC or, you know, clients or industry, e-com industry that you were seeing in the whole, right?
Yeah.
So let's start with, so January, February, March, 2020. Mm-hmm. Maybe just talk us through a little bit of what that was like for you all. What was happening in the team, clients, kind of the start of everything. What were some of your emotions?
Yeah. I mean, for all of us, we were, I mean, no one had planned on a giant global pandemic. And so I was planning to go on vacation, actually. I was like, hey, Q4 is always busy. I usually take like Q1 to go like take some vacation time. And so I had a plan to go on a cruise to China, Korea, and Japan. So clearly that did not happen. And so personally, I was kind of like thrown into, oh, we're not going and we need to really figure out what this means for our brands. At the same time, we were all in office. So we had just consolidated all of our offices across SoCal into one main office, put everyone in one roof, which was amazing. It was so fun. We had room to scale out our teams. And so we have this, you know, news is starting to kind of awaken around, hey, this thing happening, and we're seeing Apple shut down and Microsoft shut down their offices. So we're as a team saying, what should we do? And we have clients as well. We're kind of getting a sense for them, like, what are they going to do? Because so much of, again, we're, you know, supply chain is dependent on people being in the actual warehouses. And the office we're at shared a wall with another 3PL that we have some ownership stake in. And so we were already seeing, like, how are we going to move product if there's no one there to actually pick and pack and like label? And so it was kind of a crazy moment. So our CEO made the call to, like, I think many people, let's go work from home. Let's see how it goes. I was a huge advocate before for work from home. I was like, hey, can we do this? And it was kind of like, no, let's like really think about the culture, which was important. Like, I totally understand our culture is like what makes us different. But about 3 weeks in, our CEO said, we're going fully remote. And it was one of the best things for our company. And I think a lot of other brands were doing the same. And so that was a huge shift. And the big question is, how do we service e-com brands when we don't really know what's going on? And we're completely changing our model of how we work. And we're now scaling faster than ever. So we did not slow down as an agency. We doubled headcount. And so it was incredible. And so what we learned in that first few weeks is like the best thing we can do is be a partner and be really honest about how we're processing as our own company and with other brands as well. So saying, hey, here's what we're seeing. This is what we're noticing. And then data became so important because there's so much conjecture, right? If you were following Twitter in the early days, it was just like e-com apocalypse or the best thing ever for e-com. It was like not clear in March, like what was going to happen. And clearly, if you look back in time and look at Shopify's stock price, like it clearly was at the time, incredible rise. I don't know today how Shopify is doing, but that's really the answer is kind of, you know, we were still being honest and open about our own transformation as a company. And also with the brands, how we could best service them. And we really focused on how do we collect data and share that with them in a way that they can make better decisions using not just what's seeing, you know, happening in social, but really within the broad e-com ecosystem to make those decisions from.
So when everything is starting to hit, you know, mid-March, especially in during the US and doing all the research in that, March 11th was kind of that key date.
Yeah.
Then most people are kind of like, okay, March 11th. And then you start talking like, that's when like the Jazz game, mm-hmm. In, you know, the Utah Jazz game shut down. All of a sudden the NBA shuts down. All of a sudden the WHO is like, hey, by the way, this is a global pandemic. Yeah. And then President Trump made that announcement that night. Next day, stock market crash, biggest crash since I think 80s. So especially around those 2 days, like you said, everyone is kind of reeling, mm-hmm. a little unsure of what's going to happen. How initially were you seeing a lot of your clients reacting? What sort of communication were you having with them? Talk us through some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of clients, you know, at the time I was helping a lot on the sales side as well. And so we're talking to clients who they wanted to slow down because they weren't sure about how cash was going to look, right? So the idea is like, this is really new. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there's going to be customers buying. And remember, a lot of these brands were at the time trying to do some retail, kind of expand into wholesale. Like, so that's really scary for them because they have a bunch of inventory sitting that's supposed to go to stores and none of the stores are open. So they're pulling back initially. They're pulling back on their spends, right? So not trying to spend as much. And they're going to be scared initially. And I get it. I think it's easy in retrospect to be like, that was a dumb decision. But like in the moment, what other information did you have? You have no idea how bad this is going to get. We don't even know like how far this is going to go. We were thinking it's 3 weeks or so of a lockdown, not almost 2+ years of massive change. So we were also thinking short term, like, oh, this is going to be kind of like a blip. How do we take advantage of it? How do we see opportunities, but also get clients to continue to spend, not just so we get paid, but because it was an important moment. think about the year for e-commerce, Q4 is massive. So everyone's, you know, spending, you have that Q1 if you're like a healthcare brand. But March is a moment that sets up your summer. Like that is an important time to spend into summer moments to really what we call fill up the sponge, bring in more volume of customers, really think about how do I begin a message and position my brand so that when there's a moment of a sale, it's not the first time they're seeing me. And so we're really encouraging brands, you need to consider keep spending in these moments. It's better to have some momentum than to go full stop and try to start up again. Some people were convinced, some people were not. I'm going to be honest. Some people were like, nope, we're going to pull back completely and see how it goes. But a lot of our best brands were like, let's push into this. And then it became really apparent very quickly in March what kind of products people were looking into. Work from home, you think about some of those components. We have some athletic brands. So we think athletic wear, so sweatpants through the roof, right? And so that was, those are, we could already see some early signs of there may be some categories that may be insulated from this. Let's continue to try to push into those. The last one, I'll give a story. This was later in the pandemic, but one of the brands that had a good thread that will come kind of in this is a brand called Born Primitive. It's one of the brands we love working with. They're in a CrossFit athletic space, really focused on sports bras, but have expanded. And they're one of our earliest clients. They did a program called Back the Gyms because think the gyms closed down. So early on, a lot of CrossFit gyms were not open and they were really hurting. And so part of this was a question that came up, how do we help our brands beyond just ad spend? How do we think about moments and creating moments? And that was one that came out of it, of having Born Primitive. Think about how do we take our sales and the momentum we're seeing in our category that's not really hurting, it's actually going up, and support the industry that we're in that we need to be like, it needs to survive for our brand to be able to thrive. And so backing the gyms, taking a portion of sales and then giving them back into the CrossFit ecosystem became a massive moment for them. And they invented almost a new space in what should be a down moment for their brand. It was the kind of fuel that pushed them in 2020. So those are kind of those moments that we were seeing early on. We weren't that forward thinking until about probably a little bit after March, but we were starting to get the sense of, this feels like an opportunity, even though it's scary. Where can we push in?
Were there any, and if so, what were some inventory challenges during maybe like the first 6 months or so? Because then obviously, then we'll shift into the bigger conversation of like supply chain. So,
yeah. So this is the biggest challenge coming into early 2020, which was we didn't have the supply chain issue yet, right? It was kind of like early. So no one knew that was going to be a big issue. Like, again, we look back, we're like, clearly that would make sense, right? If you have everyone stopping and then starting at the same time, it's like traffic in LA. It's like everyone wants to be in the 4 or 5 at the same time. Of course, it's going to be slow. But in the moment, you don't think about that. So brands pulled back their spend, delayed their buys, and started to kind of run thin on some of the inventory. So of course, they need to restock. And so there was kind of two issues. Some brands were great. They were like, let's keep pushing into this. We have the efficiencies and we have the setup within our 3PLs and our manufacturing to afford it, which we can talk about. Like, what are the specific pay windows and net terms we have in terms of how do we have, you know, more cash on demand? So those are different things brands were working with that could order inventory and not be so hurt. The brands that were struggling had kind of overextended themselves, right? They were running really thin already. And so they needed to make a really critical decision about when to buy inventory, and they maybe pushed it back too late. And so they paid a premium later. So what we found was initially, it wasn't that there wasn't any supply chain issues initially. It was later because people delayed that caused a bunch of issues for them. So one of the examples is we had a brand, this is more recent, we're talking to them, where in 2020, they sold through their bestseller. They're a dog product and kind of focused in the pet space. And one of their best sellers was kind of, it's like a chew toy kind of thing. So they pivoted to another product and that product sold like hotcakes. It was amazing, mainly because they didn't have their best seller though. So the question comes, what do we buy next? Is this just because we didn't have our best seller or is this the product we should continue to focus on? And it's way harder now because now the cost of a shipping container has gone up by, you know, nearly double, triple. You have as well, like the margin side, like in terms of the general cost of the actual product being made, the cost of delivery is going up, not down. So that decision of do I invest on this category moving forward is a massive decision. Now, before it would be like, let's just hedge our bets, let's do both. They don't have that option, right? They need to choose which one they think they're going to scale. buy too little, they're going to miss out on opportunity and there's not enough time, right, to get it back here to sell more. Buy too much, you're sitting with that inventory and it really constrains the cash flow for all the other things you want to do this year. So it becomes really, really complicated. And so it forces us as an agency to be very, very clear about forecasting, which is what we spent a lot of time in 2020 doing because of supply chain issues. Saying we need to be very, very clear on what is going to be the forecasting model we're using, be open with that with our clients, communicate how that plays into demand planning, and partner with them in those conversations. Some brands got ahead of it and it was amazing for them because they took a risk and it paid off for them, right? They bought the arbitrage of the cost was lower because they took a risk. Some brands, they were already running thin, waited because they were not having as much cash on hand and didn't have the right term set up. And so then they bought late and paid a premium for it and made it really, really tough for them to scale around Q4 and 2021. We see that kind of slow down where people were like really, really struggling, especially with iOS changes, which we'll probably talk about.
So did you notice specific consumer purchasing shifts around things like stimulus and that key times? Was that also part of it or was that not as evident for you all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think like if I could kind of draw a line of like our ability to spend and stimulus checks, I feel like they're very correlated. Now, the category shifted through time, right? If you think about like, then if you looked at the kind of timelines, it wasn't the toilet paper. Like that's not our focus, but mainly think about gym equipment, right? And gym and sports when the gym shut down, big moment early and continued on as, but you know, not as high. It was a high spike, kind of continues on. You think about supplements and CPG brands that we have. Those were kind of bigger as we get a little bit later into the year as people think, maybe I shouldn't have like just sat at home and like ate all this food and then had terrible health. And I want to really focus on health. You know, I think in terms of the consumer buying, the same thing happened though in the same like moments. It just was amplified. So if you think in an e-commerce year, Q4 was still Q4. It's still a massive amount of revenue for our clients. It was just amplified in a way that I think honestly, like we kind of anticipated. One thing that was counter to a lot of people talking about the year was, hey, people are going to buy early because of the supply chain issues. We didn't really see that actually. We didn't really see demand being pulled forward too much on the consumer side. We could, you know, brands pushed sales earlier and that maybe helped with some of their existing customers, but the general demand curve was not necessarily much earlier. We saw it still in the same windows of time because that behavior cycle is still pretty locked in for people, right? I kind of buy around Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and that's the opportunity I want to buy in. We'll talk about 2020 versus 2021. 2021, obviously the limitation was you didn't have as many SKUs to pick from. So prices went up. But generally speaking, those moments were still those moments. They weren't like, hey, all the demand went up 2 weeks and so Black Friday was smaller. Like, no. people still acted as if, you know, in 2020 and 2021 the same way. I'm going to buy on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, because that's just the cultural rhythm of purchase that we have in e-commerce today. There was obviously on the agency side, we experienced brands trying to figure out cost cuttings because of the inventory issues. So some brands were trying to in-house pretty quickly and try to find that talent. So we saw that happen a lot, which we understand. Like, again, we're in the space of saying we need to think about what makes sense for your profit and loss statement. But like in terms of some other brands, they realized like in order for us to capitalize, we need to outsource more. We need to bring on more partners. And so we did see heavy demand coming in during kind of similar to stimulus check, not the same thing, not B2B. I'm not really saying that the business loans were a big contributor for that. We saw a lot more demand though saying, hey, we want to scale into these moments. We need a partner who understands that right away. It's going to take us too long to build the capabilities. Let's focus on bringing in CTC. So that helped us in our growth as well. We saw that correspond to our headcount going up, with also demand for our services go up as well.
Let's switch gears. And I'd like to, at some point, we'll hit the supply chain stuff, but that probably is a big part of the conversation. You brought up iOS 14, which is great. Can we talk a little bit about that? What is the iOS 14 thing that you're talking about? And then how did you see that impact brands?
Yeah, I think the mega trend we're seeing in e-commerce and just in general in advertising is the consumer is very savvy and has choices and options. And when it comes to privacy, in terms of privacy, like their demand is really they want to have more control over their information and data. We know that. Like that's been a trend that's clear. I think Apple and iOS 14, what was happening is that with the release of the new update for iPhones, iOS 14 is the update on the operating system. was going to put in a prompt that would say, would you like these apps to track you in these ways? It wasn't saying that they would default not track you. They just asked you, would you want them to track or not? Most people at the time, Facebook was projecting, now Meta, let's figure out timelines. At the time, they were Facebook, now Meta. Meta was projecting, hey, we're thinking about probably half of those people will be opting in, 30% to half. It was closer to like 60 to 70%. It was like much higher than their forecasted projection. So what was happening? At the time, everyone would, once it rolled out across iOS devices, it got pushed back a bit, but it rolled out. We were seeing really, really poor return on Facebook, across Instagram, Facebook, all Meta products. We were seeing that. So here was the question that we had to ask as a team. Is this that the performance is bad, meaning like the actual auctions are more expensive, we're losing those auctions, people are not purchasing on site, or is that we don't have the data to confirm that? A lot of people were pulling their spend because they said, Facebook is underperforming. That was the narrative, and we need to move our dollars. So we said, look, let's just look at it first, continue course, and let's see what happens. And what we found is that when we did the data, we have a tool called Statlist that we use across our clients. We pull in their data and make it anonymous and aggregate the trends. We have a report for every brand on their data versus the trend across our 200 plus brands within Statlist. It was not a performance loss. It was a pullback of spend and a loss of data reporting. So iOS 14 goes out and removes the reporting of those conversions, but the consumer behavior was the same. People were still buying on the ads that people were seeing. Meta just couldn't tell you that they were. What happened is, it's kind of like, is it the chicken or the egg? What was the result of this? Performance did go down for brands, but it wasn't because Meta was underperforming. It was because brands pulled back their spend by a significant amount of money. Sometimes 30, 40, 50% of their spend they pulled back. And that was their engine of growth. And so they felt that in October later. They felt that in November, where they don't have the audiences that they used to have. And so they have to spend a premium during the highest moment of cost to drive the same growth in volume. That hurt their performance later. As a team, we were trying to be very careful about the assumptions we're making about what's happening. And we're trying to be very slow about actually saying this is what is happening until we have the data to back that up. And so the summary for most brands is that Facebook performance wasn't underperforming at the time. It just didn't have the data to show you it was performing. What we used to figure that out, just to give a kind of sense, was we use a term called MER, or marketing efficiency rating or ratio, depending on who you talk to. And that is taking your total revenue divided by your spend, right? Or if you have the inverse, we call it ACOS, or advertising cost of sale. You just do a percentage, right? So MER is kind of our like central source of truth of like, are we making money on the first purchase or in generally the total revenue of the company? A variation of that we call AMER, acquisition MER. So all of our acquisition efforts is that profitable. We were trending that line, both MER, total revenue against total spend, versus as well as acquisition, new customer and a new customer acquisition. And we saw that performance line stay pretty steady for brands that continue spending. It got worse to people who pulled back and tried to ramp it back up again. And so our kind of takeaway, the so what for brands, is that when these moments happen, it is usually not changing consumer behavior, which is what you really want to focus on. The reporting is going to change dramatically. We're going to see those changes happen across the board. Google's delayed on their end, right? They haven't rolled out their changes, but that's going to happen on search soon. And so that's going to affect the data that we're getting on ROAS on platform. But it does not change the behavior of the consumer. And what you really are looking at is the total revenue against your total spend as your governor of, are we winning here or not? And then we have some nuances that we talk about anti-fragile e-commerce and all that to help do that. But iOS 14 was a pivot point for us to be very clear about our role in this industry, that we need to be very clear on communicating what are we seeing across the data set before we just jump on the bandwagon of, here's what Twitter's saying about it's the end of, you know, of iOS and, you know, Facebook's ability to drive sales. Not yet, just harder to see.
So did you actually see then brands shift spend from Facebook to other channels? If so, where typically were they going with that money?
So a lot of brands got very scared quickly. And of course, the trigger response is, Facebook's not working for me. I still need to spend. I know I need to grow. I'm going to move the money now. And so a lot of brands, obviously TikTok, Snapchat were two major channels for them. Google was probably the biggest shift for people. So moving more money from, Meta products into Google was a big shift for the majority of our clients that they wanted to try and test. We'd already been telling brands to increase their spend on Google anyway, because it's the product is just significantly better than it was previous years. It's just improved over time. That was more of a increase your spend in general if you can afford it. Will help you show you if you can afford this. But don't pull back on Meta just because you're scared. You're wanting to move money to Google because there's opportunity there as well as on Meta. So that's a complicated answer for most brands. It's not as clean cut as like, yep, everyone does this. But a lot of brands did. Some of it was a mistake. They lost demand, right? They didn't drive demand. So they looked at the ROAS on platform and associated that for the best opportunity for growth, which was not. It was, in a sense, robbing the opportunity to grow net new customers. So you saw MER, that acquisition MER, go straight through, in a sense, go down, or the A cost go up, the amount it took to drive the volume got way out of control. And so they tried to, because they pulled all of their demand gen out and put it right into the bottom of funnel. When that's gone, now the same activity isn't working. It's getting really, really expensive. Brands who were more cautious, right, saying, hey, let's actually continue with Meta. We understand there's some data loss. What is the average? Facebook released information pretty late. Sorry, Meta released it pretty late, but told us it was 30%. So we could apply that metric, 30% on average data loss, and say, okay, well, let's apply that to your current ROAS. Here's what it really looks like in reality. And let's compare that to MER. And we found that brands were fine. Like Meta was fine. If you just added 30% back, you're actually winning. Let's scale more here. So TikTok and Snap, right? Everyone is asking right now in 2022, where do I spend my money? Because there's a different challenge with Meta today around their actual product, which is inventory. So that's a separate thing than 2021. But 2022, is their inventory is less. And so we can see that by daily active users, right? So they report on this in the earnings call, and you can see their stock price did not like that. And so what does that mean? Our founder, Taylor, has a great thread about this. But basically, it means the way this works is if I have less inventory there, it's going to get more expensive for me to do anything there. It's not just competition. It's saying for every single person I need to reach, there's less of them. That means it's more expensive to scale. And so we are seeing brands trying to move into other more social kind of visual platforms like TikTok and Instagram to drive demand gen, right? Remember, a lot of times Google is kind of demand capture still. Now, they don't like when I say that because it is more than demand capture. I do know that. But for many of our brands, their ability to kind of leverage all of the products isn't quite up to speed yet. So we want to say, how do we best take advantage of this moment and develop a plan against Google to do some more demand generation on some of their other products that we can talk about? And so we're testing there aggressively, but it's hit or miss, right? With any new platform, just think like early days of Instagram, or think about Instagram stories. I remember Instagram stories was brand new. When I was starting to lead strategy with some of my teams, Instagram stories was like what Facebook was pushing. And it was great. It was super low cost. I remember it was like a third of the cost for traffic, but the conversion rate was like terrible at the time, right? It was just new. The people who were using that product were more about the social than about the shopping. And so it just wasn't that great. And we're seeing some of that on some of these other platforms. It's hit or miss. Some brands are killing it. Social shopping kind of format brands, cosmetics, awesome. Sometimes though, like some other brands that are more hard goods maybe struggle here. Higher AOV products maybe struggle here on those channels. So we say, let's look at the landscape. We can try it, but let's not just rip out the engine to try and pursue. That's really risky. Let's think about running this on a platform we know has great supply right now. It is declining, but it's not dead. And let's start trying on these other channels. But there is a precursor, which is, can you afford to on all the other components of your business? Is your cost of delivery, your actual cost of goods being maintained, or is it going up? We're looking at things like, in terms of your OpEx, right? And this is how deep we get. Are you just adding a bunch of headcount and causing way more weight to the business in a moment where all your supply is getting more expensive, right? All that squeezes margin and squeezes ability to spend and opportunities. So we ask these questions first before we even talk about channels, right? Can your business sustain a loss on that channel completely? If we don't make a single dime on that channel, can you still sustain that? If not, it's not the time. We got to focus on the rest of the business before you can even afford to test there. If every dollar matters so dramatically, it's not fair to a team to be like, get me great return while also testing and guarantee return on this new channel that's not proven. And so we tell brands, let's be very clear about the priority. Right now, for many brands, it's not the time. They need to really tighten up on some of the business operations side, really think about creating the right kind of content base to support those channels, and then slowly test to the place where they can tolerate losing that amount of money on Snapchat and TikTok. And then when they win, it's icing on the cake, right? It's amazing growth for them and it's diversifying their account. We love that, but not at the deficit of like profitability that will kill them if they overspend, because they're just scared that Facebook today is slightly down, but is not completely gone. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. You alluded to this. So we just do PPC, right? Mm-hmm. Just Google Ads, Microsoft, that sort of thing. But obviously we'll work with either in-house teams or other agencies on like the social side, right? It is funny how for the brands who had the issues and struggles and concerns, as you brought up with, you know, with Facebook tanking, to then shift it, if they didn't fully understand exactly what you had noted, which is you're moving from primarily a demand gen platform. Mm-hmm. So especially if they were, let's just say they were taking that and like, well, let's pump more into Google Shopping. Mm-hmm. Google Shopping is by its very nature, for the most part. Now, admittedly, they're starting to play more in like YouTube and display and that too. So you are starting to actually get some element of that. But for the most part, especially when it's search-based, it's kind of simple in how it works into being demand capture. And that's basically you need someone to think of their need for something and therefore search for it. Like that's what search is. It is just extremely different philosophically from Facebook, from social media. And you know, that's exactly what you noted. And we've seen that as well. Is it wasn't just enough to say, hey, we want to shift dollars to see where we can get our ROAS. If they were shifting their funding from primarily that demand gen to demand capture, they really were going to get into trouble at some point. So
yeah, it's not immediate, right? That's the thing. It's like, it's kind of like a truck. It's, if you're a marketing manager today working on an e-com brand, your boss is like, my ROAS is down, give me better ROAS. I'm reporting to the board next week. We can push the volume up on that shopping campaign through the roof. We can do that on the branded side. We can push more volume through for Google. And at the expense, right, of pulling spend from the place you're generating all that demand, especially if you're leading a category, right, and inventing kind of the demand for the category on Facebook, yeah, you don't see that tomorrow. You just see better return. You know, as an agency, we think in one-year horizons. We don't think in like 1 month. Like we forecast an entire year together because we hope that you stick with us. And so for us, though, it's like that's not going to help me get to new customers, because you have a boss like me who's looking at net new customer growth saying, great, your return is fantastic, but your number of new customers is down by 30%. You will die if you continue this process. And that's a challenge for brands because it is so easy. It's a drug to focus on a singular metric, a singular number to drive their business, which it does not, it doesn't exist. There is not a single number to drive your business, but it's a combination. It is a constellation of numbers you have to keep an eye on that makes health. It's like a person. Health is a series of components that lead into that ultimate result. And so a lot of times I am sitting on calls with a head of, you know, growth or a VP of marketing, or you name the person, trying to remind them that like the goal is growth. The goal is not immediate return all the time. That they hire us, generally speaking, to scale their growth. And there are times where that is a painful investment that pays off, right? And we're partnered with them and that we're compensated in that way. And so it's hard. It's really hard though, if you're really under pressure and you're under tight situations, for someone agency to tell you, invest on something that is declining in terms of users, but is the best bet for you right now. Cause it feels like the boat is leaving and I'm not getting on it because everyone's on that boat. When really it's just a lot of people on Twitter saying, this is really cool and it drives engagement, but it's not actually driving the business growth for the majority of the brands we work with. And we will get there, right? It's not probably today. And a lot of times too, it's the sexy thing to do because the other stuff is not very sexy. Driving organic growth through SEO is not very sexy. Content development that really focuses on solving problems. Pulling from your customer service reps what they're asking and developing content, not sexy at all. No one's going to be like, let's retweet that. Let's make a thread about that on Twitter. Like, that's not happening. But it's essential. I talked to a brand yesterday. She was really, really passionate to get on our growth team level. It's our platinum product. It's our top level strategist and all those components. And she wants to start. And I said, look, I understand. And I would love to take your money. But this is this is my responsibility. It's kind of a fiduciary of e-commerce. Your e-com like help is not here yet. We will crush you just by the weight of our cost if you don't get these other things up. We will start. We will hit everything we're trying to do. And your engine will stall. You don't have enough organic. You're overly you're overly capitalized within ad spend. Like, you don't have organic social driving this. Like, there's nothing here to support the weight that I'm asking you to increase on. And it's a hard conversation for brands, but it is the right conversation. You want to be ready for growth. You can't just do it because you want to. You have to be at the place where you can supply it. And that is not sexy at all.
And what we've seen is one of the places that they'll turn, you noted, it's like a drug, and it really is that kind of that demand capture type side. And the problem is the more you focus and pour into it, there's like it's a limited resources type of a situation.
Yeah.
There tends to be, unless you're building demand and literally creating searches, right? There's a cap to the number of people who are even, let's say, searching for this. It starts to become inefficient the more you invest and invest. That at least that we've found. Totally agree. If you're not also focused on building that demand, then the more you focus on more of those like mid bottom funnel searches, it's getting more expensive. It's getting more inefficient.
Yeah.
You're starting to struggle. Like, there kind of is that point, and all of a sudden they're looking around saying, hey, this must be someone's fault. Mm-hmm. Agency just can't bring us the results like they used to be able to, right? It's like, well, no, that's because you're trying to dip too heavily into this pool. So
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, one thing I just add is like, you know, obviously the testing side is still important. It's just coming in with an intentionality around how you're testing. What I find, if people are honest, is they're coupling, I have to get performance from this test, which is not a test, right? That's not a fair test. You're saying to this opportunity, this is not about me winning on this one opportunity. It's for me to learn if this is going to work. Now, I don't believe that you should have your entire spend be testing. Like, that's bad. Facebook doesn't, Meta doesn't agree with that. Google doesn't love that either, but you should have a set side of it. And the idea is, where are we aligning our intention with this? Like, and it's not fair to change your mind, right? It's like, well, I'm going to punish the marketer. I'm going to punish the performance growth marketer within the house, in the agency, because that test didn't yield us 6x results from our current base of spend. You should actually plan for it not to. In most cases, the average, the kind of bell curve is what the majority are doing. And that's working. It's a bell curve for a reason. Most people are spending that way because it's generating results. When you're testing, you're pushing out to the edges of that. And that's okay. Like, that's good. One of the things I love with search, I tell brands, is it's a treasure trove of intelligence for you. If you do PPC, if you're doing paid Google ads, you're getting way more intelligence that you're getting than from Search Console. Right? Search Console is going to give you some senses of, hey, here's what the search from organic generated for you. But you don't get what exactly they looked for, which I love. When a brand comes in and I want to know about their customers, I'm looking at their search term report within their searches to see what are they looking for? And so many times the category that they're searching most for is not the main objective that they set their account for. And it's an opportunity right there. Now, that's why smart shopping, I have a love-hate, right? With smart shopping, I love the engine it creates. I just don't like that I don't get to see those like that intelligence, right?
Yep.
And that's just because I'm a strategist. Like, my job is to provide intelligence to brands on what they should do. So it's a double-edged sword. This is going to get you results. You're going to lose out on some of that information. But the testing to get intelligence is worth it. Like, you can totally set up separate campaigns just to understand what is people's kind of intention here. What are they looking for? What long tail opportunities could we maximize in a more competitive search space? Because what's going to happen is search is going to get way more competitive now as people move all their money there, what's going to happen to all those auctions? So much more expensive. And so I told brands, like, let's get out of that expensive red ocean into something blue, which is more focused on more long tail, thinking more about use case comparison. Like, those are really good opportunities for YouTube ads. Like, there's so much you can do there. You have to just give it space, though, to mature and become an opportunity for you. If you treat it as if it needs to be the lifeline for your business, you're never going to give it the chance to really succeed.
Love it. Okay, so don't want to take up too much more of your time. Few minutes left. Let's talk maybe some supply chain stuff. So I really like that we got some great iOS 14 stuff, but maybe talk us through in terms of like client-based stuff. What maybe were specific ways you saw you had supply chain challenges? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of take it where you want. Yeah. Like if you want to talk through a little bit of story of things that you saw, or maybe specific challenges, specific little insights, stories about this, that, or the other container prices, whatever it might be.
So my favorite thing was brands saying, "Hey, we're out of our bestseller, but we want you to perform at the same rate as you did before." And so that makes it hard as a partner to be like, well, look, we both know that both these things are related, right? It's not, again, I always bring it back to consumer psychology, like their behavior. If they like the black legging and that's your bestseller and it's gone, you're trying to convince them to change their mind, right? On like, you don't really want black, you want pink or you want navy, right? And so that's going to take more energy and more cost and more testing, and it's just going to get more expensive. And so that's one thing where, for us on our end, we're driving the volume. If you remember, kind of in our placement, we're kind of at the front end. We're trying to drive in customers, new customers. We do have the retention side, which has been huge for us, and that's counteracted some of the cost side, which we can talk about. But specifically, what I've noticed with brands is, one, like, just the material cost has gone up. So that affects everything down the road. So if your cost to make the product, right, just the materials have gone up, let alone the shipping and the timelines for that shipping, what it's doing is it's crunching those cash flow windows, right, those cash payback windows. And so you have then where between the time, if you don't have the right setup, where now you're saying, okay, we're going to make this giant PO and I have X dollars in the bank. And as a strategist, something pops up. It's amazing. We're seeing sales. I want double the spend. They can't. Like, they cannot. And so what are some specific examples? Okay. So we work with a large like cooler company. And, you know, for them, what we've noticed is specifically this same issue where there would be supply constraints around some of their best products. So it means we have to get really, really creative on surfacing other kind of products. That puts more constraint on us as an agency to create new advertising and creative and ads around not bestsellers, which means it's pushing into testing and it pushes into poor performance sometimes. That's really tough, right? Where it's like, hey, this is the thing they want. We don't have it. We got to navigate that. And so that's tough. I think in terms of like other brands, what we have seen is then a lot of competitors show up too, right? In terms of the same space. I used to work with two of the largest percussion therapy device products. So they're, you can probably Google them and you'll find them. And they, you know, for them, it's a lot of their supply chain is way more complicated. At the time they had moved on, but I can see like in the wake of those products, way more competitors showing up at our door who don't have the same level of efficiency in terms of scale. They don't have the same level of like really dropping the cost of the units because they've bought, you know, 1 million+ units. And so they're asking us to do the impossible, which is upsurp the main 300-pound gorilla in the category, do it at a higher return while also not having the ability to even navigate because their costs are so high. And so that's something that I'm seeing, like it's squashing competition too, where we're seeing brands that typically would have more competition scale, but can't, like just it's removing those brands that don't have the value prop. You know, I think the other side too is sometimes the supply chain gets a little inflated, right? In terms of like what's happening. But what I've noticed more that's been interesting is wholesale booming back to life and pulling D2C inventory. So one of the brands we worked with is in the food space, more of the kind of keto protein space. And they had allocation set aside for direct to consumer, like good to go. There, what they found is that because health is an industry, that healthcare space has gone up, their Whole Foods orders, their like store orders went through the roof. And so they had all these POs now that they were oversold. They anticipated not having to fulfill all of those because most of the time the stores cancel. And again, I'm not the wholesale guy, so if I'm messing up the language, sorry. I'm on the D2C side. But anyway, the way they explain it to me is we now need to liquidate all of our D2C inventory into wholesale to fulfill the commitment we already made. That's hard because I'm like, I have a contract with you. You need to stick around and work with us in this. But that was the thing that was happening too, is we're seeing wholesale, that's a lot of money. If you're a CFO, you're like guaranteed sales versus spending money for maybe having a sale, where are you going to put all your inventory? Put it all on wholesale, right? And short-sighted because you don't own the customer data. You're trusting the store that they're going to keep doing that. So I don't agree with that move, right? It's a sense that, yeah, I understand why, but you want to own your customer. You really do in the future. That's where we're moving to. But we see wholesale roaring back to life in a way that most brands didn't forecast. And they had already put those orders in. And they're thinking, oh, they're going to cancel. Well, they didn't. And now where is that inventory coming from? And they can't get more here. Like they cannot get it in a boat to here in time. And so they have to make a difficult decision. In a sense, mess up the wholesale opportunity, or in this case, which is easier, pull back in D2C and hope that they can do it later.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's the first I've really come across that even temptation and kind of thinking through that for some to liquidate their D2C inventory into wholesale. That's really interesting.
It's interesting, and it's not surprising if you think about it. If you're cash constrained, right? This is why I always bring it back to like the economics of the business, is that most of these decisions are tied to the finances of the mechanics of the business operation. It's really not even about, as much as I would love it to be, a problem on the marketing side. It's like they're making decisions about their cash flow. And that is what we have pivoted all of our strategies to think in that same language. Like all of our teams now that we train, the first conversation we have is about here's what a healthy e-com business from a cash perspective looks like. Our best strategists will take a profit and loss statement, break it into four pieces to isolate your CAC, cost of delivery, OPEX, and your profit. Because what we're talking about is trying to convince brands to think about profit and long-term growth over short-term, really short-sighted, short cash movements. And we're advising our brands, our best ones, not to make that quick jump because it looks nice now. That drug looks so nice for me just to get that wholesale order and that's cash today. That Google spend shifting 80% of my budget there looks really nice today. But when it comes to the long term, what I think brands we're going to see is probably a lot of brands who are going to be in a really tight position later in Q4. Right? Because they didn't set themselves up for success in this channel. And the winds of change and the trend line and the arc of business is moving towards e-com being the dominant player. It's not today. We've moved forward really rapidly over the last 4 or 5 years. But think about how small it is compared to the global GDP and how much it's growing. It will become the dominant channel. And so you not investing in the future is like you not buying an Apple, well, back in March in 2020. When it was at a discount, right? It's you not investing in the ability for you to be positioned well in this channel. When, remember back in wholesale, those are going to get constrained as well. Real estate will get more expensive over time. Those will be issues. You're competing for shelf space. Remember where D2C came from, this idea of efficiencies in me being able to go directly to my consumer and be able to pivot fast enough to respond to them instead of trusting the store's intention with my brand. And so that's what I'm kind of pleading with brands today, saying, I understand the diversification story. That's fine. But not at the deficit of the main way you talk to customers, consumers today. You really need to own that channel and be able to scale that. If not, it's going to be really hard to compete with Nike. It's going to be really hard to compete with all these other brands who have way better supply chain than you and can demand way better conditions than you could ever demand. Because they have $1 billion, right? And you don't. So it's much better to try to do on this small pool than try to win globally in this space unless you're really set up to be successful. And maybe you have some venture capital I don't know about that's like incredible, but I don't know.
Yep. I think it's hitting a lot of those brands now.
Yeah. Look, if the consumer is shifting towards a e-com first, I get to make it the way I want, customization, none of those things lend themselves to wholesale. I get it. I really do. And I think it's a great marketing channel. if I was going to say demand gen, yeah, for sure. Think of it just like if I was doing TikTok. I'm going to use this to drive in general demand for my category. But I'm pretty bullish on D2C continuing to be a long-term payoff for people. Now, I am also, so I'm focused on growth, right? I'm in advertising, but I'm focused on growth, and it doesn't always mean ramming ad spend to the moon, right? It's about a balance, right? It's about a balance. And I want to see 50-50 split of organic to, we talk about this last metaphor I'll give you is we have something called a layer cake. We think about ad spend and marketing stack. The bottom is our existing customers LTV, which is the last piece about it. It's those existing customer cohorts we talk about a ton. It's where we base our forecast on. Those existing customers are the most predictable. They're the cheapest to maintain. And it's logic, right? If you have a customer today, it's a lot cheaper to keep them than to find a new one. And they are insulated from the increased cost of the platforms. Above that is organic, right? It's the general mix of earned media, so PR. Think about some of the affiliate components. But it's also, it's organic search, which is incredible space. That is not slowing down, right? With AI today and what Google's investing, search is not going away. And people are using it more than ever. And so organic is a great category to start investing in. The last piece is that paid media at the top of that cake. If you think about like kind of a pyramid, the base needs to be big to stabilize the top. But most brands are upside down, right? The bottom, that the top is on the bottom, that paid media is the biggest component of their spend, but it's the most unstable. And so you see brands that are shifting wildly because none of the base is stabilizing them. What we encourage them is saying, we will own and really work on paid. We really want that. But the ability and the speed of which we can scale is directly determined on those bottom two pieces, your existing customer cohort and your organic or earned media that's driving in that volume for much cheaper spend than any paid media is ever going to be. The best brands across the board in the shoe category that are like incredible, like I can't say which one, but a really incredible brand that is worn by a bunch of people, to then in terms of I think about our lifestyle fitness brands. All of these brands that have been the most efficient scalers have had high MERs. And where does that MER come from? That total efficiency come from? Incredible retention of their customers, right? 60-day window time, making 30% on that, right? Increases 30% of their revenue on that base of existing customers and really strong organic. So it's actually not that they're the biggest spenders in scale. In comparison to the other channels, it's actually small, right? They may be spending $1 million a month in a Procter & Gamble CPG kind of brand. But in terms of like specifically the setup, it's really that base of existing customers, organic, and then paid being the smallest piece. And that's the future, right? That is where brands are going to thrive. And that's where they're going to spend double their spend every year is because they've grown the base to support it. The last note on LTV, just a note on it. It's really hot right now. It's like LTV to CAC and like you need that. We have some definitions that I think are helpful for people. Number one, we don't think about that lifetime. We think about 1 year LTV. How much does my percentage go up in 1 year? And I think in 60 day. So our team thinks in 60 day LTV. How much does the value go up from that initial purchase? And then within 60 days, how much is the value there? That's usually the window of time. 60 to 90 days is that cash payback window for most brands. So it doesn't help you to think like 10 years, LTV is X, but some platforms will just spit that number out for you. It's not very helpful. You're not going to survive 10 years if they don't buy again in 10 years.
Yep.
You need 60-day windows. It's a healthy window, which means that you can't just do everything on a monthly basis. You got to think quarterly. What am I doing quarterly to drive up my LTV there? Email retention, SMS, great, right? But you got to think about, how does that work with the rest of my system? I can't just layer on SMS and hope that just drives my LTV up. You got to think about what is the natural cadence of purchasing these products and what is that window of time for my finances that I can support. And that blend, that's the magic of having a great base of retention is it's enough time for me to make my money back so I can increase my spend. As well, it's in a cadence that's predictable so I can forecast in advance to insulate from supply chain, right? If I know I have this many customers that are coming back, I already know how much money at minimum I'm going to get. So even if paid doesn't work or is in the red, I know generally where I'm starting with. And so if I'm thinking about that PO, I can think about that main forecast of my existing customers because it's not going to go up 30% with CPMs. It's going to stay pretty steady. that's super helpful for brands. That's the intelligence people really want today. And I think I recommend it. And honestly, like what I spend most of my time on is doing that forecast. Let's just do the forecast together. Let's look at your LTV and your existing customers in that cohort. And let's then forecast demand off of this cohort, not based on how much I can scale or spend yet. Do that later. Start off with existing customers and then organics next up. If you can do that with seasonality, those two are really solid. You really have a sense of how much you can spend and how much you need to buy.
Cool. I'm glad you hopped in there because that was excellent. You're giving us a masterclass on e-commerce as well. So we may kind of want to just like dump this on people and be like, just listen to this and take notes.
I hope it's helpful. But yeah, but this has been my conversation the last 6 months, honestly, with our teams is really these components that I've gone through. So hopefully it's helpful.
If people want to, you know, hear more from you, or like, do you have a place that you're writing right now or speaking or social media? Where can people find you?
Twitter, Chris_commerce, really simple. So you can find me there. And then obviously Common Thread Collective, so commonthreadco.com is where most of our intelligence is there. I think like if anyone wants access to some of the data that we have, I'm happy to give out some codes as well. So if you need that, I can give you. We have a kind of monthly data report we pump out from Statless that gives some insights into those trends. So people can make decisions from their own sense of their business versus what we're seeing across those same trends. Our strategists use that same data set. So it's like, okay, for you, for us, same data. And our hope is that if I could say what would make me sleep well at night is people not making decisions because they read something on Twitter that immediately, but they thought about it against a data set and then they made a confident decision. So if that is what they do, fabulous. But Common Thread Co, I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Chris_commerce. And then my email is chris@commonthreadco.com. I love to respond to people who have questions and connect. And then we have a last thing I'll give is we have a group called Admission. Admission is our community. So if you're not quite at the like hyper growth stage of a company, you want to get started. All of this is in our Admission. So youradmission.co is another space that I put content there. We have a group on Circle that, kind of helps people navigate and they get access to our strategists. So we jump in there and answer questions all the time. So
this has been a bonus episode of the PPC Ponderings podcast. Keep checking back for more interviews and our next full episode. If you like what you hear, please consider sharing this with your network and leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, may the auctions be ever in your favor.